Thank you very much. Thank you, John, and thanks to all of you for coming out here today. And, you know, I started thinking, you know, how you attract a few thousand fans to come to the Patriot Hall of Fame presented by Raytheon? You offer them a brewski. I hope that's politically correct. It is. Okay. You know, listening to Gil, I was just thinking, this is the brewski season of the Patriots. It's the 54th season that the Patriots are in business. You know, it's great to have all the brewskis here this evening. His lovely wife, Heidi, and their three growing boys, TJ, Rex, and Dante. And I think one of the lasting memories of Super Bowl 39 for all of us was seeing Teddy romping on the field with TJ and Rex. And what a great beginning that was, and what a great ending. So, thanks, guys, for giving us that great memory. You know, in the 6 years that we've hosted this Hall of Fame ceremony, this is by far the largest crowd that we've ever had. So why don't you all give yourselves a round of applause, and thank you very much for being here. And I also want to thank all of our past players who created this great history of the team when we had the privilege of sitting in the old Foxborough Stadium and watching the legacy that you all created for us so that we could have this Hall of Fame by Raytheon. And, you know, we really did it to create a legacy where all the memories could be remembered for many generations of fan to come. I would like to ask all the Patriot Hall of Famers and alumni to please stand once again so that our fans can express their appreciation to you. Please, all of you. Once again, our family has been privileged to have a great 20 years owning this franchise. This will be the beginning of the 20th season, but it'll be our first without Gil Santos calling games. And to think for 36 years of the Patriots 54, he was calling the games along with his great partner, Gino, for 28 years. Who I agree should be in the Hall of Fame in Canton. And I don't understand why not. We thank you so much. And we think that's the championship broadcast team forever. But speaking of great teams, our next honoree played a significant role in many of our greatest teams. With a name like Brewski, I knew that the day we drafted him, he was going to become an instant fan favorite in New England. You know, I even remember when he came into the old bubble. I was standing next to Parcells, and he said, "Who's that Italian guy down?" No, he said, "Who's that Mexican guy over there?" Well, what I didn't know was through his own hard work, dogged determination, and remarkable resiliency, he would become one of the most iconic players in franchise history. On the field, he was always intense, focused, and fundamentally sound. And for 13 years, he went full tilt, full time. He became a great role model for his teammates by the way he conducted himself. He became an elite NFL linebacker and earned Pro Bowl honors. But that was never his main goal. His main goal was winning football games. In his 13 NFL seasons, out of the 13 seasons he played, the Patriots had a winning record 11 of those seasons. He was a 7 times team captain, an 8-time division champion, a 5-time conference champion, and a 3-time Super Bowl champion. For more than a decade, he was the heart and soul of the Patriots' defense. It's no coincidence that during that decade, the Patriots enjoyed the most successful era of any team in NFL history. His remarkable and courageous return to the field following a stroke, the first and only player, NFL player, ever to do so, only added to his iconic status here in New England. Teddy has left many indelible impressions on the franchise, including a locker room legacy of how he used to address the team after a victory. Please turn your attention to the CBS Scene video board for a quick look.
How we feel about coming to the NYC and getting an open name victory?
Oh, yeah!
How we feel about free hats and t-shirts?
Oh, yeah!
How we feel about making NFL history?
Oh, yeah!
As tonight's presenter, I want to ask you all a simple question. How do you all feel about Teddy Bruschi being inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame? Oh, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor and privilege to present this Patriots Hall of Fame jacket to one of the greatest players in franchise history, your own Teddy Bruschi.
Thank you, Mr. Kraft. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Let me set the record straight, probably for Bill Parcells. It's Italian, half Filipino. That's what it was. I know it's easy to get mixed up, but it's a nice jacket. It's a nice jacket, isn't it? The goal on the teams that I played, the red jacket was never the goal, and free hats and t-shirts were. Now this jacket, it's probably cost a lot more than those hats and t-shirts, but free hats and t-shirts, that said you did something. That said you won an AFC East Divisional Championship or a conference championship, and hopefully you got that third set, that free hat and t-shirt that said world champion. And we got to do that 3 times. So I'm honored to be here and honored to accept this jacket, and my wife tells me I look good in red anyway. Look good, babe? It looks all right? All right. I'd like to thank Gil Santos for calling every play of my career. I enjoyed listening to him when I could. It was always on the highlights, hearing that background voice of him and Gino and Gil, that voice that I always could recognize. When I first met Gil, I didn't know him by face. I knew him by voice, and I could recognize him right away. And Gil, it's an absolute honor to be going in with the man that called every play of my career. Thanks, Gil. Thank you. I want to thank all the Patriots alumni that are here, all the Patriots of the past that laid the foundation for this organization, because this all wasn't here a long time ago. These steps, this stadium, the hall, we had Foxborough Stadium. Now, I love Foxborough Stadium, but it wasn't Gillette Stadium. We had to drive to practice outside the Wrentham State School for Boys. And these guys that came before us had less than that. But they still played hard. They still laid a foundation for us. And I'd like to thank all of them for the work that you put in for us to get us to where we are today. Thanks, guys. I want to thank Andre Tippett and Steve Nelson, two linebackers that set the standard on how to play linebacker for this organization. Coming here in Foxborough Stadium, you used to walk down a bunch of steps, and there were jerseys up, and they were number 56 and 57. And it was Tippett and Nelson. And you knew and you heard stories of how linebacker was played by them, and it put yourself to a higher standard. Nelly, Tip, thanks a lot, fellas. Thanks. You showed us how to do it. Thanks. Other Patriots of the past, Mosi Tatupu, Steve Grogan, Sam Cunningham. I miss Mosi. Those guys set the foundation for us. Thank you for all you did. As a young kid growing up in San Francisco, California, I loved to play football. Football just came naturally to me. Let me check that. Defensive football always came naturally to me. I never was that much of a quarterback or receiver or anything like that. But tackling a guy was just natural. Being able to see a guy get a ball, wrap my arms around him, and slam him to the turf, that's what I love to do. We had a grass field outside my yard. My yard was a community field of grass back in San Francisco. We had busted sprinkler heads. We'd bust our knees open and get scraped. So we had no pads. We had no cleats. We'd rip our T-shirts tackling each other. That was the best football of my life, right there. I remember the first tackle I ever made, and it was on my father. I was only around 8 years old. Probably the same age as my youngest son, Dante. I was 8 years old at a park in San Francisco, California, eating at a picnic table. I was eating at the picnic table because my older brothers, Tony and Giovanni and my father, they wouldn't let me play because they said I was too small. Teddy, you're too young. You can't play. It's us two against Dad. I said, fine. I sat down, was having a sandwich. My dad was on a breakaway, and he was running away from my brothers. He was about to score a touchdown. And I was sitting there at the table, and I looked, and I saw him running behind me, and something inside of me just snapped. I got up from the picnic table. I ran to my father, caught up with him, wrapped him up by both ankles, and he dropped like a tree. My father looked back while he was on the ground, and he was expecting Tony or Johnny, but it wasn't them, it was me. And he said, holy smoke, Teddy, why'd you do that? And I think at that point, my father sort of knew. He might have slightly had an idea what I would become. You see, I didn't play organized football until I was 14 years old, and that was just by chance. I walked into my freshman orientation, and I saw a couple buddies from eighth grade, and they motioned over to me and said, sit down next to us, Teddy, sit down. And by their feet, there were a pair of football cleats and a water cooler. And I said, what are those for? And they looked at me and said, We're going to try out for the football team. You should come. So I went. And that's how I started. And my father, he came and saw me practice. He said, Ted, you got it. You got it. You're going to be good, Ted. You're going to be good. But you got to play linebacker. You got to be an inside linebacker, Ted. And I said, Dad, I don't want to play linebacker right now. My coach has me at offensive guard and defensive tackle. It's what I was playing. No, Ted, you got to play linebacker. No, Dad, I don't want to play linebacker. So I went on through high school and played offensive guard and played defensive tackle. And then I got a scholarship to the University of Arizona where they wanted me to play defensive end. Teddy, you got to play linebacker. No, Dad, I'm good. I'm good. Dick Tomey kept me at linebacker, my college football coach. One of the greatest coaches I ever had. Played me at defensive end, Dad. He wants me to play defensive end. Why do you want me to play linebacker? You're going to be a linebacker, son. I sacked the quarterback 52 times in college. No other player in NCAA history did more. I tied Derek Thomas's all-time sack record. My father said, you got to play linebacker. 1996, third round of the NFL draft. I'm at my apartment in Tucson, Arizona. You get to the third round is when all three rounds were on the first day, and you stop watching. My family was there. My girlfriend, Heidi, was there. Of course, she became my wife. And we were watching the TV, and we got bored. Man, it wasn't fun to watch anymore, so I walked by the TV screen, and at the bottom of the screen, it flashed Teddy Bruschi, 86th pick, defensive end out of the University of Arizona, to the New England Patriots. And it's quick. If you watch ESPN, it just flashes, then it goes. It was the 86th pick. And I looked at everyone, and I said, I think I just got drafted by the Patriots. And they're like, what? And so we watched the ticker. 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way to 86. 4, 5... But it never got to 86 because the phone rang. The phone rang, and it was Bill Parcells on the other line. Teddy. Yes, coach? We're going to play on special teams and middle linebacker. And I thought to myself, really? My dad passed away in 2001 before we won our first Super Bowl. And sometimes it's hard for sons to tell their fathers this, but I think I'm going to tell my father right now in front of all of you what I probably should have told him a long time ago. Dad, you were right. But so was I. Sort of. Yeah. My parents divorced at an early age, and my mother, she raised us all by herself, and eventually she got remarried. And my stepfather's name was Ron Sandus, and this is a man that helped me tremendously. Ron ended up recognizing what I could do in high school, and he researched how a kid could get from high school football to get a college scholarship. And there was something that you need, and all my boys know, you needed this highlight film. You had to put a highlight film together to put out to your college teams and send them out and look at this kid and look at that kid. And Ron helped me do that. He was at every game that I ever played. He was at every wrestling match. He was at every track meet where I triple jumped and threw the shot put and threw the discus. His name was Ron Sandus, and he did a great job of being my father at the same time not being my father. Please give Ron Sandus a round of applause. My mother's name was Juanita, and my mom, Juanita, didn't want me to play football. I remember coming up to her the first time after that day first day on the football field saying, Mom, I like this, I want to play, but Mom, I need a pair of cleats. And she said, Son, I'm not going to buy you a pair of cleats for this sport. You know how much cleats cost? I said, Mom, I really love this. She said, No, you got to wait. Make it 3 days. If you last, then I'll buy you a pair of cleats. I went out there in a Via tennis shoes and a white t-shirt over my shoulder pads. Still knocking people out. Knocking them down, having fun. But my mom didn't want me to play. She said, Son, that sport is dangerous. I want you to stay in the band. Hey, nothing's wrong with the band. I started in the Catholic choir. I ended up playing clarinet. I moved to saxophone. I got my kids in music right now. Music is very important. I'm taking guitar lessons. My guitar teacher out there, what's up, man? No, Teddy, stay in the band. 3 days. 3 days lasted. Oh, man. But she relented. She relented and bought me a pair of cleats. And I went out there and had my football cleats, and she bought me a new jersey. But I tell you, my mother, she would never watch me play. She always waited till I came home and had that tape that Ron made so she could watch it. Because when I came home and I walked through the door, she knew I didn't get hurt. So she's like, all right, Teddy, I'll watch the film. And she'd watch the film. You got to be mentally tough to play this game of football. I learned all of my mental toughness from my mother. My mother could look Bill Belichick in the eyes and he would crumble. My mom passed away in 2009. Please give my mother a round of applause. Well, she bought me those cleats, white high-top pony cleats, the screw-ins. They were the good ones, too. And yes, I ended up playing middle linebacker, and my dad was right, but that was the beginning. Coming here to the New England Patriots as a defensive end that had never taken a pass drop before, I was in a meeting room with Al Groh, my position coach, and he was explaining to me how to play linebacker. He said, Teddy, we're going to go over cover two. I said, okay. As a linebacker, you line up 5 to 7 yards deep. When you recognize pass, drop to the hook. I raised my hand. He said, yes, Teddy, you got a question? I said, yeah, where's that? Where's the hook? I didn't know where any of it was. You see, all I did in college was rush the passer. If there was a tight end, I played jam seven. If the tackle dropped back, I was going after the passer. That's all I did. So Al Groh had to teach me everything from scratch. Al Groh, thank you for teaching me where the hook drop was. I like to thank Bill Parcells, my rookie year football coach. I only had Bill Parcells for a year. I wish I had him more, but I only had him for a year, but he helped me lay the foundation of how to be a professional football player. Not so much football knowledge, but football survival and how you survived in this league. Teddy, players, he tell all of us, football will give you a lot of things. Zoe, you remember this. Football will give you a lot of things. You can buy a nice car. You can buy a nice house. It'll get you some fame. But there are certain things you got to earn in the game of football. And you got to earn your respect, and you got to earn championships. And that's what Bill Parcells taught me. And Bill, you see, Bill did a great job of doing more than that, of being so stern, because he can make you feel this big sometimes. But then he let you know he loved you. I remember one time I had a good practice. I intercepted Drew Bledsoe, took it to the house. Bad throw. And Parcells, after practice, said, Brewski, get in the car. You see, we had to drive to practice, and Coach Parcells always drove this Cadillac Eldorado. And he put me in that car, and he talked to me about my family. He talked to me about my career, and he asked me if I had an accountant. Certain little things like that. That's what I remember from certain coaches, and he did that for me. Bill Parcells is going in the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year, and he deserves it. Give him a round of applause. Now, the next few years of my career was under head coach Pete Carroll. Now, we didn't win any championships under Pete. We won some games, but we didn't win any championships. But I've got to thank Pete Carroll and his staff, like Steve Sidwell and Bo Pelini, for teaching me how to play. I was still so raw at that point that I needed those three years under Pete Carroll, Steve Sidwell, Bo Pelini to become a better player and a better linebacker. Give Pete Carroll a round of applause. Thank you, Pete. All right, then a guy named Bill Belichick came in here. There we go. Coach Belichick had this easy way of making the complex very simple. You see, he had complex game plans, complex schemes, complex ideas, but when it came down to coaching a player individually, he would make it like it was black and white. This is how you do it. This is how you perform and make it successful. It was so simple. He made the complex simple. I think that was a part of his genius, a part of why he succeeded so well, teaching football to players in a way that they could learn it. There were coaches that helped him do this because sometimes you got black and white with Coach Belichick and that's all you get. Sometimes you need a little gray. And certain coaches helped him do that. Romeo Crennel helped him do that, all right? Eric Mangini helped him do that. Dean Pease helped him do that. Do your job. I was sick of hearing do your job for so many years in my career. But then I learned, because when you play under Bill Belichick and all you hear is do your job, but year after year, it's do your job. You guys hear it.
Well, you just got to do our job, get better, you know, one day at a time, do things like that.
That's all you hear, right? And that's all we hear too. When you end up translating that, the way we became successful is we learned, veterans like myself and Willie McGinnis and Mike Vrabel, Rodney Harrison, Andruzzi, Law, Light, all of these guys, okay? I think what we did was we took doing your job to the next level, because I always believed it was this by the time I finished with him. Do your job first. And once you got that down, help someone else do their job better. And when you got 5 guys understanding that, then you got 10 guys understanding that, 15, 20, then you got a team working together like that. Belichick may say, do your job. Veterans, we got to translate. And we did. Listen. I'm too old. When Wes Welker hurt his knee a few years ago, blew it out when they were playing the Houston Texans, I texted Wes. Because truly I believe when you play professional football, no career is complete without a comeback. Wes had to do that. I wanted to let him know, because I learned in 2005 after my comeback from a stroke. I remember the game. I thought I was done. All right. I thought I was finished. I remember calling my doctor, my neurologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, Dr. David Greer. I said, Doc, I want the number of the guy that has done this before, because I want to know if I hit somebody, is my brain going to explode? If I hit somebody, is the device in my heart going to move? I want to know, give me the number of that guy. And there was silence on the other line of the phone. And I said, Doc, what's wrong? He said, Teddy, you'd be the first. And I said, I'll call you back. I mean, I didn't know if I wanted to be that guy. But I remember the comeback game right here in this stadium in October and all the support that all of you gave me. If only you knew what was going on in my helmet, in my brain at that time. I didn't think I was doing the right thing. I did not know if this was going to work out. But I ended up playing 4 more years, and I am not a stat guy. You see, I don't really keep track of a lot of the professional stats that I made, but one number sticks out in my mind. It's 366. 366 tackles, that's the number of tackles I made as a stroke survivor. And I'm proud of that. I'd like to thank Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital and Ann McCarthy Jacobson for what they did for me and helping me get back to the field. I'd like to thank the New England Patriots training staff, Jim Whalen, Joe Van Allen, Dave Granito. I needed so many people. I needed so many people to help me do that, and I needed all of you also. Thank you for your support in that. After my stroke, I formed a team called Teddy's Team with the American Stroke Association. They're here. I'd like to thank all of you. I'd like to thank you because you helped me answer the question that you helped me feel a way that it took me a long time to feel, than to say this, that I'm proud to be a stroke survivor. Thank you for doing that, everyone. I'd like to thank Mr. Robert Kraft for forming a relationship with me that went beyond employer and employee and beyond owner and player. Mr. Kraft, how do I put this? So many conversations we had that were non-football related that I remember. I love talking football with Mr. Kraft. He'd ask me questions, I'd give him honest answers, but that wasn't what it was about or what I remember. I remember talking about my wife. I remember him telling stories about Myra, him and Myra, and how they related to me, and how when you got someone strong in your corner, like Mrs. Kraft or like Heidi, life's going to be all right. But he gave me all of that and all of that support, but you could joke around with Mr. Kraft too. I mean, he was really one of the guys at times. I remember a story. It was during Thanksgiving, and we were getting ready for a game. It was Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and the big debate that I started on the sideline between the defense and the offense was dark meat or white meat. What did you like to eat on the turkey? We got time and practice. We just talk about things, you know. It must have been a special teams period or something like that. So I'm there with Roosevelt Colvin, you know, other linebackers debating. Some guys like dark meat, some guys like white meat, and they're talking about gravy and cutting the breast and all of this stuff, and we're really getting into it. And Mr. Kraft walks around the middle of the field through us all. We're on the sideline. I don't know why he was in the middle of the field, but he's the owner. He can do whatever he wants. So he's walking down the middle of the field, and I said, "Stop, Mr. Kraft." And he looks over. And I said, "Dark meat or white meat?" And he looks over, he gives a wink, and he says, "Dark meat." And the place just explodes. All the dark meat guys are high-fiving. All the white meat guys are just, "Oh, yeah, get out of here." That's the kind of owner he was. And thank you for forming that relationship with me. And I know you try to do that with a lot of your players. And that's what makes you so special. Thank you very much, Mr. Kraft. Okay. Let me talk about all of you, okay? There's two words I can use to describe the fans of the New England Patriots. Listen closely. Passion and pressure. I thought about this long and hard, too, because I always felt your passion. You could feel your love. You could feel your hate. You could feel it all. Your passion was evident in the stadium, through the radio airwaves, through the TV, through the articles. I could always feel your passion. I love that about all of you. But there was an element of pressure that you always applied, and I always respected that. I remember a play in 1996 when I was a rookie. We were playing the Denver Broncos. The call was Brown right. It was a fake punt. Zoe's laughing already. The call was the punter was Tom Tupa. He was supposed to throw it to Corwin Brown on a little 7 route, okay? Corwin was covered. Everybody knew to cover Corwin on fake punts. So there was me playing wing, and I'm the outlet. 3 yards, 4 yards, just out there. Tupa threw it to me, and I dropped it. And we lost, and we got our butts kicked. I remember the next day in the Boston Globe seeing an article. Brewski blows it, whatever the headline was, but I remember the picture. I remember you guys making me feel like a bum. That's okay. That's all right. I remember the article, the picture of me on the ground, the picture of me dropping the punt. And right there, I didn't know if I was cut out for this business. That's what I'm talking about. And I dig that about you guys. But I saved that article for the next 10 years. And I looked at it occasionally. And I told myself I'd never be that guy again. I'd never be that guy that caused this team to lose. And I never was again.
Thank you for your passion and thank you for your pressure. Okay, okay. Hey. I love you too. Listen, maybe one day I'll feel a little more comfortable in this red jacket, okay? Now, you have to forgive me if it takes a little time. You see, when we won hats and t-shirts, there was one in every player's locker. And every teammate got a hat. And every teammate got a t-shirt that said they did something, that they accomplished something. I'm the only player up here today getting a jacket. And I feel conflicted. So I will eagerly await many of my teammates to join me up here in wearing this red jacket. I love you all. Thank you very much. Thank you.